that session in the series is called Glimpses of God Among Strangers, and what I'm trying to do is to invite you to come through the medium of some talking and film to different parts of the world and keep your eyes open to see if you can glimpse God among strangers. And I'm asking this of us in relation to the work of the church, which is maybe called faith in action, faith in deed, the way in which we behave as Christians without opening our mouths and preaching about it. And my premise is, I think, that if you go out with that in mind, you can go anywhere in the world and see God in surprising places. And I'd like you to watch for that and think about that as we talk in relation to three things. One is seeing God in others. A second one is having whether or not God sees us, they see God in us somehow at the same time as we're seeing God in them. And then a third possibility here in this session would be if you would pretend to become film critics and turn this into a kind of a film lab, I'd be grateful, because yesterday I used a film from Peru that I helped to make. Today it's not a film that I made, but the church has communications professionals who try with meager budgets in an audience who is used to huge budgets to portray things in audiovisual media. And do we succeed? If we succeeded in showing you glimpses of God, I think we might be succeeding. But you could help us think about that. And so I lead this session both as an aid worker. I work for Lutheran World Relief in New York City, but also as a filmmaker, something I do in collaboration with other people. So today's journey to go and glimpse God, and I'd like to make a list of clues on how we might keep our eyes open as we go through this discussion. Today's journey takes us back 50 years to 1947, to the time when Lutherans were refugees. Now, when I say refugee, what's the first continent that springs into your mind right now?
Africa.
Asia?
Asia.
Because of?
All the oppression over there and our involvement in wars over there.
Okay.
Latvia. Weren't there Jews, Lutherans from Latvia that came
with? Yeah. Now, you're thinking sort of historically, you're thinking maybe the present-day news to a degree, I think.
That's right.
But
we are.
This picture has changed over time. And in the 50s and 60s, it would have probably been Asia. In the 80s and 90s, it's probably Africa when you think of what continent is refugees. But in the 40s, it would have been certainly Europe. And there are two books in the bookstore that relate to the classes that I'm leading, and I'd like to point them out to you. One is called Together in Hope by John Bachman. John Bachman's a longtime scholar and churchman and seminary president, and he wrote a 50-year history of Lutheran World Relief in 1995. That's one. The other one is JAMKED, which is this is a general overview of 50 years. This is a specific look at a place where you can glimpse God in close up, if you like, village development work in India. So they're very different books. And today's session relates much more to this one, but I wanted to also point this one out. And to think back to the time of this film, which is called Toward a Better World, I'd like you to think back to 1947. And in 1947, rough calculation is that one Lutheran in five was a refugee. There are roughly 60 million Lutherans in the world. In 1947, one in five of those Lutherans was a refugee. Why? Because if you think of the map of Europe, as the Soviet armies pushed to the west, and the American armies pushed to the east, and the British helped out, and the French and others, many people were caught between them, and many people, I think it's fair to say, chose to flee the Soviet army because of their concern not to be taken by that army and rather to come into the hands of the other army. And in that movement, across lands where many Lutherans live, one Lutheran in five was a refugee. And this did an interesting thing for us. It made us as Lutherans in this country, and I don't know how many of us in this audience are Lutherans. Could I just ask if you mostly are, before I assume that you are? Yeah, okay. Those of you who aren't, bear with us and tell us if we're thinking straight. It made us aware of needs that we hadn't paid much attention to before. And it put pictures in our minds of things that we hadn't thought, I think, very much before. And some of you may be old enough to remember those years and help us to understand what it was like, especially after you see this film. But John Bachman's wife, Elsie, had relatives who came in boxcars from Eastern Europe into what is now Bavaria. And it was a little bit like the horrible deportation of the Jewish people in World War II, where they traveled in boxcars, and many of them didn't make it through those journeys. Well, some of that happened also to the refugees who were fleeing to the West. And her relatives remember the boxcar arriving in Passau in Germany, and they opened the doors, and they took out the dead people first. And these were just refugees. Part of the movement which brought some of them to this country, but kept most of them in Europe in a place where they needed help. A man named Karl Mao, do any of you know his name?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He passed away in Seattle a couple of years ago. He was a young relief worker in Europe at that time. And he tells a very interesting story. He watched a German parish deal with two bags of Lutheran World Relief flour. They had received in their village two bags of flour. And like good Lutherans, they debated, the elders of that parish, they debated for 2 hours what they should do with that flour. And the question of the day, and they had hungry stomachs, and they were living in a destroyed village. The question of the day was, can we eat it ourselves? We need it. Or do we have to share it with our neighbors who are also hungry, who are Catholic, who are maybe agnostic or whatever. And after 2 hours, they decided, no, we have to share it. We cannot keep this in our church. We've got to make it and share it available to the village. And that is, I think, the first clue I'd like to put up here. And as you watch the film, look for that one. Clue number one is that when we go out in God's name, and according to the title of these talks, when we go out looking for God, to act like his children, maybe the first thing we have to think about is that we help people and we reach out on the basis of need and, you know, not, what are some other characteristics you could choose to help somebody by? You could say creed, not race, not religion, not politics. You know, in that village, there were probably some ex-Nazis. Maybe there were some former soldiers. So feeding your neighbors could mean feeding people with whom you who got you into the trouble you're in a sense. But that was the thing they came to in that setting. And that becomes an important principle of this kind of work from those very earliest days. So what I'd like to do is play the film, and or play part of the film and stop it and talk about it and play some more of it and stop and talk about it. And I'd like you to keep your antennas open and remember some of the things that are said and be prepared to say what you think about this way of showing the world. And really, what does it say about that time, 50 years ago? But also, what does it say about today? And I think also, if we're church people, what does it say about the thinking in the church at that time compared to the thinking of the church today and what's on the church's minds? I'd like those to be some of the questions in your heads as you watch this. Could you switch out all those lights there, please? I guess we need to.
Can you see over it?
That's right. Now we're going to choose.
long in advance that the next war would be a terrible conflict. For each war in turn produces new weapons and new tactics, each more terrible than the last. But even those who callously precipitated the Second World War could not foresee the full consequences of their aggression. After Pearl Harbor, we in America dedicated ourselves to victory over totalitarian powers that threatened our way of life. Driven by necessity, we fought the enemy with weapons and tactics more deadly than his own. Both sides knew this war would not be won only upon battlefields. Victory demanded that the enemy be paralyzed by a rain of destruction upon his factories, his railroads, his seaports, and his crowded industrial cities. Our hope was to end it quickly. Our prayer was that this war be the last. Finally, there came the day of victory and rejoicing. At first, we told ourselves that peace had come at last, that the lives of our brothers, sons, and fathers were no longer in jeopardy, that our homes, our beloved institutions, and our way of life were once again saved for future generations. We reckoned the cost of victory in the blood and sweat and tears of bitter conflict, told ourselves that through these devices, we'd take the final base of peace. Yet the end of the Second World War brought not peace itself, but only one more chance, and perhaps the last chance, for man to build a better world to which peace might come. Emerging from World War II as the strongest and wealthiest of nations, the United States was the best able to take the lead in planning this better world. We played a major part in establishing a worldwide organization in which all peace-loving nations might share the task of eliminating the causes of war. Yet among the shattered cities and impoverished peoples of Europe and Asia, conditions exist which threaten all our plans. How can we hope to achieve peace and security through future cooperation between nations, when at this moment, hunger and hopelessness are bringing new wars? For these, there is no peace. For their misery of body has brought a decay of the spirit, resulting in hopelessness and despair. Especially in war-torn Europe, in the very cradle and stronghold of the Reformation, is the hand of Christian aid sorely needed. For here, where war has set man back 1,000 years, millions live under conditions far more conducive to unbelief than to faith. It is to us, their brethren in America, that they must look for a sign of the love taught by our Lord Jesus Christ. We alone possess the resources to sustain bodies and restore the faith of those people who feel themselves abandoned by God and man. These words of the Holy Scriptures are a clear guide to us in an hour when every Christian is called upon to re-examine the sincerity of his faith. For I was a-hungered, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me. By their fruits ye shall know them. During the past 3 years, American Lutherans have contributed millions of dollars for the spiritual and material relief of their brethren in Europe and Asia. While governments and secular agencies must carry most of the burden of feeding and clothing the victims of war, there are many reasons why ours is the aid that counts most. For ours comes to them through the church as an expression of our brotherly concern and Christian love. To provide an effective agency for the handling of relief contributions, Lutheran World Relief was organized in October 1945 as the material aid arm of Lutheran World Action. Under the direction of Administrative Chairman Clarence E. Krumholz, Lutheran World Relief has been collecting food, clothing, medical supplies, and self-help materials and shipping them abroad since early in 1946. The value of these shipments through the end of February 1948 totaled almost $6 million. The gifts included used clothing and bedding, used shoes, new shoes and clothing, food, medical supplies, shoe repair kits, sewing equipment, garden seeds, soap, toys, and many other items. Most of these shipments were gifts in kind. During 1947, a number of purchases were made possible by cash contributions and by the allocation of $375,000 from Lutheran World Action. It is usually possible for Lutheran World Relief to buy at less than wholesale prices, thus getting more for each dollar than can be obtained by individuals who buy at retail. Businessmen will be interested in a report which Administrative Secretary Bernard Confer has prepared for Dr. Krumholz. It is a brief financial statement which shows cash expenditures for relief work of more than $365,000, donations to other relief agencies of $75,100, and gifts in kind valued at about $3 million. This report reveals that less than 1% of the total value of these contributions is spent for administrative costs. Your gifts have been shipped by Lutheran World Relief to 14 countries. From New York, more than 11 million pounds of relief supplies have been sent to the devastated areas of Europe. And from San Francisco, nearly 70,000 pounds, mostly clothing, have gone to Japan and China. When the original appeal for clothing went out to Lutherans all over the nation late in 1945, the response was excellent. Later on, this appeal was enlarged to meet the needs for food, medical supplies, sewing equipment, hand tools, and other self-help materials. Through the cooperation of pastors and lay workers in the rural parishes, substantial shipments were gathered. In the towns and cities, a similar wholehearted response to the appeal brought further evidence that young and old shared a strong sense of fellowship with their brethren overseas. Not the least of these gifts are the toys offered by the youngest from among their most cherished possessions. These may seem like small sacrifices, but if each of us gave in equal measure and in the same spirit, this would indeed be a better world.
I'll just stop it there for a second. Could you turn the lights back on for me? Just check on a couple things here. Any comments on the style?
Pretty old. Pretty old.
How do you like the logo of Lutheran World Action? A male arm with a cross and by this conquer?
Yeah. King James Bible.
Yeah.
Lots of male pronouns.
Mm-hmm.
To protect our way of life.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about some of the theology in the narration? There's some good lines.
Yeah, there's. It's hard to get back by the other.
Well, I think we gotta be balanced.
Yeah.
We didn't invent this stuff today.
No, I know.
Hunger and hopelessness breeding new wars.
Yeah, it's
I mean, is that still true?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
They look to us for a sign of the love of Jesus Christ. Is that still true? Do people look to us for a sign of the love of Jesus Christ?
I hope so, but yeah. I don't think it's true.
Yeah.
Can you think of a country where it might be true? I think it is still true. I have to say, if you can come tomorrow, we're going to talk about Angola. Angola is a country absolutely throttled by the Cold War.
Mm-hmm. Who is that?
They know we're Christians. Well, America. American Christians, but they know we're Christians.
True for Namibia.
Yeah, Namibia.
Yeah, I was going to say parts of Africa.
Yeah. think any place, Africa especially, where Africa's going to be the most Christian continent in the world in about 10 years. And there's a lot of awareness, a lot of critique of us from Africa in a very polite way, but wondering why we don't act more Christian sometimes. Other comments on the narration? Another couple lines here. We alone are able to help these people who feel abandoned by God and man. Do we feel that way anymore? That we alone are able to help?
No.
Why not?
It probably isn't true anymore.
Well, we're still the richest country in the world. We're still the richest country in the world.
We are, but we're not alone as rich. I mean, we don't perceive ourselves as the only rich country anymore. I think then we perceive ourselves as the survivor.
Well, we've never had to recover from the devastation of wars or invasions that these people have had and moved. We've never endured that.
So we're insensitive to it, or we just don't know what we're dealing with?
Well, you were asking, do you think it's our responsibility, and are we in the best position, maybe, to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And I think possibly that's true.
Mm-hmm. Did any of you line up like those, were you any of you those little girls we saw, or little boys lining up with their toys?
I remember some of that solicitation, and they even asked us to save the pill bottles, because they needed to give them out in single doses, otherwise the natives people took the whole thing, they said. Mm-hmm. So they asked the individual pill bottles, and we saved those and gave them what we do. Plus quilts and clothes.
How about the line, our aid counts most because it's given with brotherly love or sisterly love? Do you think our aid counts most? More than, say, food stamp or USAID sack of grain from the government? Does our aid count more?
Well, one thing helps, we don't, a lot of it isn't held out for administration. If it's in the government, that often happens, and you don't know if it gets to the right place. This is why Youth and World Relief is known for that. It gets to the people who really need it.
An interesting thing here is that Lutheran World Relief, Lutheran leaders who were involved on the board had to actually lobby the federal government to permit aid to go to Germany. We were helping the countries around Germany, but we weren't helping Germany right after the war because it was the enemy. And Lutherans had, a key role in lobbying the Truman administration and saying, no, you've got to help these guys. They're not, you know, the German people are not our enemies. The Nazis are, or were. And they changed the policy. And for those 5 years, from 47 to 52, Lutheran World Relief was the largest private agency aiding, getting aid into Germany. And that's an interesting record, because today our church is certainly not defined by its engagement for the world, I have to say.
Karen, didn't you have a relative that helped some of those people in Germany?
Antagonism toward the Japanese. Because it did say we're all mostly clothing.
Right, 70,000 pounds to Japan, 11 million pounds to Europe.
Maybe we could sympathize more with the Germans than we could with the Japanese.
Well, to me, that's a real interesting point. You know, how do we get moved to help? We get moved to help by people like us in trouble, I think. We don't get moved to help strangers quite as easily as we get moved to help kin and kin, of course, you know. Yeah.
I think in giving for then and now, it not only blesses those who receive the gifts, but it blesses the givers also. By sharing what we have, then we are part of a larger picture of following our Lord's commandment.
Did you see some pictures there that related to that Matthew 25:38 verse, when did we see you hungry, when did we see you thirsty? You know, those people, they are then, they are now, in a sense, that gallery of faces. Any other comments? Personal reflections? What I'd like to do now, if you turn the light off again, I'll fast forward for a little while because there's a whole bunch of loading scenes. I don't mean to pass over those who load. LWR has been said to stand for loading while raining. But I'd like to get to the part where you see what's actually happening in Europe
parish have given unsparingly of their time and skill.
Here's a quilting group.
And in the making of garments for infants and children. Gifts of this sort are greatly needed abroad.
Okay, here's the fast forward now. That's a warehouse in Pennsylvania. Here's the packing of the goods. They work hard, you know, fast. We still have bailers like that. We get about 250,000 quilts a year still.
Where do they mostly go now? To
Africa.
Africa, that's what I think. Yeah. We've got quilters in our church.
We'll follow a quilt tomorrow to Angola. And you see Church World Service mentioned there, which is still our partner. American waves of grain, pigs, cows, farmers donating their own food. This is a freedom train from Nebraska, friendship train rather. And this is a ship from the Northwest here, the Christmas ship, Pacific Northwest, USA.
Notable contributions to Lutheran.
Then industrial contributions, H.J. Heinz Company. And the bales still look like that. I've flown in the plane full of them. And here they come to Europe.
Hungary, Poland, Yugoslavia, and to German refugees in Denmark. In most cases, the distribution is handled entirely by local church agencies. In Germany, where the relief problem is greatest, our distribution is handled by the Protestant Relief Agency, known as Evangelisches Hilfswerk. As a member of Prelog, the alphabetical name of the Council of Relief Agencies licensed for operation in Germany, we have 4 full-time representatives in Berlin and in the American, British, and French zones. It is most important to understand that the relief supplies of Lutheran World Relief in Germany and elsewhere are always distributed under church supervision. But every agency receiving our supplies is obligated to make distributions strictly on the basis of need, regardless of race, creed, or political affiliation. The conditions under which people exist in all the war-devastated regions of Central Europe are almost unbelievable. But in Germany especially, misery in a ruined land is multiplied by the crowding in of 14 million destitute refugees. Not only are hundreds of thousands homeless because of the widespread bombing of cities, but in addition, tremendous numbers of political refugees and displaced persons from the Baltic states, expellees from Eastern Germany, and war prisoners sent back from Russia have been added to the number who must have food, shelter, and clothing. Those who were blasted from their homes by the intensive bombings of the latter part of the war have been forced to seek shelter where they could find it. Many have continued to live after a fashion in the ruins of their own or their neighbor's home. Bomb shelters and bunkers are highly prized because at least most of them have roofs and solid walls. Boxcars or shacks improvised from wreckage are crowded by those who can find no other place sheltered from the cold and the rain. And you may be sure that so cozy a sleeping place as an abandoned bake oven is a home to be envied by thousands. Such is life in what were once the proud cities and towns of Germany and Austria. Equally tragic is the plight of those displaced from the Baltic states or Eastern Europe as political refugees or as expellees. For these are wanderers who can never hope to see their homes again. Herded together in camps where the best that can be given them is poor shelter and inadequate rations, their hopelessness feeds on misery. These are the people for whom new homes must eventually be found in other parts of the world, where their native skills and industrious habits can make them useful citizens in the better world of tomorrow. Meanwhile, their only hope is that they will be able to survive with the help of God and their fellow man. For some, hope is a forgotten word, The prisoners of war often return to their native land only after they are starved and shattered wrecks. They find their homes destroyed, their families dead or scattered. 3 years have passed since the end of war. Yet there is small evidence of peace among the shattered homes, the hungry bodies, and the weary souls of these who are our brothers in Christ. Where, amid this desolation, is evidence that these people have not been forgotten? Where will we find some sign of our Christian love and concern for them? How can we tell that our efforts to help them have not been in vain? Wherever the symbol of the cross stands out among the ruins, there you will find evidence of the charity and Christian fellowship that go with your gifts across the sea.
What they thought of.
And in the hearts of those to whom your gifts mean life and hope, you will find the renewed faith, which is your highest reward. The food that comes to these unfortunate people as your gift through Lutheran World Relief is distributed where it is most sorely needed, and it serves to keep alive many who would otherwise face a slow and miserable death. It must be obvious that people's bodies must be kept alive if their souls are to be fed with the gospel. When they know that the food they receive is sent by you in the name of Christ, it provides nourishment for both the body and the spirit. In the larger cities where the population is highly concentrated, most of the food from American Lutherans is distributed from central agencies under church supervision. Great care is exercised to be sure that food is not wasted and that it goes out in direct proportion to need. Only by distribution through local agencies is such efficient relief possible. In the rural areas, most of your gifts of food are distributed by pastors and deaconesses who are intimately familiar with the needs of their parishes. No tribute can be too great for the heroic work of these men and women of the church who care for the bodies and souls of their people while their own bodies are frequently sustained by little more than faith. One extremely important relief activity supported by your contributions is the supplementary feeding program for school children. Food from Lutheran World Relief sources is used to provide one hot meal a day for thousands of school children who otherwise would suffer permanent disability from malnutrition. We are truly building for a better tomorrow when we help these youngsters build healthy bodies. After hunger, cold is man's greatest enemy in post-war Europe. Clothing is especially needed because there is little fuel to provide heat. Most clothing now worn is threadbare, patched, or ragged. Thousands of tons of shoes and clothing provided by Lutheran World Relief for distribution in the war zone have done much to relieve suffering. In addition, raw materials have been shipped abroad for processing, where this procedure will cut manufacturing costs and provide local employment. Because the need for clothing, shoes, and bedding grows greater every day, we must continue to send such essentials overseas in increasing quantities. Hunger and exposure have brought bitter suffering to Europe's millions, but with them has come widespread sickness and disease. Medical supplies are vitally needed for the undernourished babies and children, for the old and infirm, and for the care of war invalids. Many lives have already been saved, and thousands have been restored to some measure of health with the aid of the medicines bought with your contributions. But the need will continue and grow as cold and malnutrition take further toll with the passing of time. Only by continuing large shipments of medicine and medical supplies can we hope to avoid a new scourge of tuberculosis and other diseases which accompany privation. In the belief that food, clothing, and medical supplies are of only limited value when people are discouraged, idle, and hopeless, Lutheran World Relief has made it a policy to help people help themselves. Wherever possible, employment has been provided by shipping in raw materials for processing, and self-help materials have been secured in an effort to reawaken the initiative and interest of the individual. By providing tools and the raw materials for handicrafts, we have been able to foster the native talents of many persons who have lost all interest in life. The products of their work, too, have been found useful, especially when they provide such things as furniture and clothing. Garden seed distributed in refugee camps has made it possible for industrious people to add fresh vegetables to their limited rations. A double purpose is served also by providing community-sized shoe repair kits with which men learn a useful trade while repairing thousands of shoes for their needy neighbors. In this way, you are helping to build character and self-respect among the disheartened, helping to bring a ray of hope into the lives of those who had abandoned themselves to despair. We know that at best, many, many years must pass before the scars of battle disappear from the face of Europe. It may be generations before all the ruined towns and cities, the shattered cathedrals and parish churches, and the broken homes and cottages of the continent are rebuilt. And at best, it will be many years before the ravages of privation are erased from the minds and bodies of those who survived the Second World War. It will be a long, long time before it can truly be said, now there is peace. But of one thing we can be sure, only if while their bodies are being rescued from misery, the souls of the disheartened are reawakened to faith and hope. Only if, through Christian charity, we aid our suffering brethren to regain their faith in God, their self-respect, and their self-sufficiency. Only thus can souls and bodies be reclaimed from the ashes of total war to take part in the building of a Christian civilization. To reach this goal, the help of every Christian is needed. Through Lutheran World Relief, each of us can demonstrate to the far corners of the earth his fulfillment of our Lord's command. Inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, ye have done it unto me.
Try to hit the button on the top back right-hand side of that machine, please. Some reactions, comments.
I hope they had can openers.
Pardon?
I hope they had can openers.
Yeah.
That was a pink can, a large can, but the, you know, the people that were given cans.
But I saw a can of poverty go to somebody else. I wonder what they thought of that.
Yeah. Ethnic food.
Yeah. You still have a tree project? I have friends in Sweden who sent money for 8 trees when I hit my 80th birthday in Angola.
Uh-huh. In different places we do. It's not a tree project, but in different places, mm-hmm. Reforestation
and
so on.
Yeah. And we also had Sunday school projects for the heifer project. Wasn't that for dairy and cattle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is the date of this?
48.
Yeah.
It was the first big effort they made to try to tell people what had been going on, because there was an interesting phenomenon in the church, which I think we could think about. Remember, this was the time of the Marshall Plan. This was the time when America decided they would try to do something about the world in an international spirit, and the church did too. It was a time when I think you guys correct me, some of you who have the memory, but I think we as Americans had the sense that we could do right by the world as a government and also as a church. It's real interesting to see the parallel Marshall Plan and Lutheran World Relief, which is kind of a Lutheran Marshall Plan. And people
which came first, Lutheran World Relief?
I think the government beat us to it. I think the Marshall Plan was proposed by George Marshall in 1946.
Yeah, Truman.
This started it. Lutheran World Relief was there during the war.
Yeah.
It started helping in other places. Lutheran World Action was helping with some of the orphaned missions. Mm-hmm. Missions cut off from Germany, for example, where Americans could still go and help out. So it's probably hard to answer that.
Yeah.
But I think it's real interesting to see the way our church takes its cues from our society on some of these things, which maybe we ought to say are our business as Christians, more so than some of the other things we could get involved in overseas. I don't know. Compare it with today, when foreign aid is almost a dirty word.
Yeah.
And people are, instead of being fired up to help, I've met older people today who say, of those days, it was your duty as a Christian. You gave money to these kinds of things.
Were there other religions that went along with this relief?
Pardon?
Like the Catholics or other religion groups, they also sent relief to Europe?
Yeah,
others.
Definitely.
Oh, no, it was not only the Lutherans.
No, but Lutherans were the leaders for Germany.
For Germany.
Yeah, they were the leaders for Germany. And they were, as you saw, some other countries too, Yugoslavia and other places, yeah. No, I'm giving just the Lutheran version of the post-war years.
Jonathan, do you think that we have lost that sense of duty of giving for assistance around the world?
Did you see where they focused on the financial sheets, hand typewritten out there? You know, how far some of these things have changed in our minds. If you did that today, you'd still have the same sort of low overhead. It's like 7%. We do a lot, many more things now. But I have to say, and you know, I got to say this in the right spirit, how many Lutherans can you find a pulse on in this country? You know, how many real live Lutherans are there in this country? 7.5 million? The Lutheran magazine did a survey that said that there were roughly, I think, 1.5 million in church on a Sunday in the ELCA and about 1 million in church in the LCMS. Remember, both groups are behind LWR. That's one of the things we can do together with our Missouri Synod brethren and sister. Sorry, sisters. Well, say there's 2.5 million Lutherans in church on a Sunday. You know how much, if you take this kind of work overseas, the total budget for the year, and you divide it by the number of Lutherans, works out about the cost of a cheeseburger per Lutheran per year. And that's a meaningless statistic because it isn't everybody helping. It's a remnant, I think, a bell-shaped curve where it does get preached as a duty. And if you look at it from a scripture point of view, that's a kind of a disturbing prospect, because if you take out the references in the Bible that refer to the poor, you have a holy Bible, a Bible full of holes. You know, if you take your scissors and cut out all those verses, you have a holy Bible.
You know, I think there may be some reasons for that, but one of the reasons that strikes me is that when we sit around in our church and put together the budget for how we're going to, you know, make it through the year, and we set aside the budget that's going to go to the ELCA, for example, it's interesting to experience the dynamics among people talking about that. Why should we be giving so much to the ELCA?
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps the ELCA doesn't do a good enough job about talking about all the other programs that money is really supporting. It's not just going to Chicago to fund administrative offices, things of that nature. I think maybe we don't communicate very well about Lutheran World Relief and other kinds of programs supported either by congregations or by...
Definitely not. And that's part of the dilemma we have. We have a low overhead, but that means we also don't have any money, very much money, to blow our own horn.
Right.
And we live in a very expensive culture to communicate in. You know, we're all dependent on the world's most expensive form of media, which is television. And if you want to blow your own horn about this kind of work on television, as World Vision does and so on, you have to spend about 30 cents on the dollar. So it's an interesting dilemma. But that, this is a real interesting topic, and I think it says something about devotion to the church in those days, maybe, and trust in the institutions compared to today. Also the consumer mentality we have, and the desire to give directly to something and know what your money is doing. You know, we get all this propaganda about it. It's your money. You should know what it's doing. And that's good, and on the other hand, it's also quite limiting because it requires a lot of expensive feedback, and it wipes out a certain amount of trust that people do know what to do. That sort of brings me to some of these clues about glimpsing God. Could you all help me with a couple of them? Did you catch any clues in there on how we go about glimpsing God among strangers? I put up one before the film that you go out in Christ's name and you help people on the basis of need, not creed or color or religion or race or politics. You know, you help people because they need help, not because you like something else about them and then you're going to help them.
Maybe without expectation of any return.
Okay.
Maybe another way.
So some kind of unconditional?
Yeah.
I'll just put unconditional.
Look at that bouquet, it's really strong. Here's my hand.
Maybe this doesn't jump out at you, but it's a big deal. They use local parishes. I told the story about Karl Mao and the Lutheran council members deciding if they had to share their wheat or sack of flour or not. The idea that you work through local people, I'll just say local partners, I think you see a lot more of God if you go out and right off the bat you share the task that you're involved in. It's not you come to help them, but you working with them in a manner that will be of help in a wider setting. And that started with, it was an easy start in Germany because there were Lutheran parishes to work through, and the Lutheran Church to bring back to life in a sense, because it had been severely compromised by the war and deciding whether or not to side with the Nazi government. But local partners were used, and it helped put people in touch with the real needs that were out there. Anything else come to you as a kind of a guideline for?
Well, there was evidence of the cross at certain dispensing points.
Yeah.
There was Christ was behind us.
So some kind of a link, an openness to give a witness.
Yeah.
Probably not. Do you think they would put a Bible in the top of the sack of flour before you got it?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
No,
but
no.
That does happen, you know. No,
this just happened, but it was.
So let's just say the witness is there. You're open for the witness, the connection between soul and body, and so on. One line for that was, "Food in the name of Christ provides nourishment for body and spirit." That was one of the narrator's lines, mm-hmm. I think.
Holden had a part in preparing a ministry over in Africa. We had a girl here by the name of Meredith Olson. She's married now.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a graduate of oceanography in fishing. And Holden paid for her to go up in Massachusetts some place to study fish farming. She's over in Africa with her husband doing fish farming, showing the people how to do something on a small scale to help themselves. And it's working very well. She's been back a couple of times now.
Yeah.
And it's storybook, but the fish they're using are the same ones that Peter caught in biblical times. So it has a connection.
Mm-hmm.
But that was one of the first things that Holden did was to send her, provide her with training and send her over there.
Mm-hmm.
And helping them to help themselves makes them feel much better than always depending on the population.
Yeah.
I just want to ask a question about what conflicts might arise between giving in your own area and with your own parish and so forth, as opposed to giving overseas. I mean, there's so much need now and so much need in our own city, our inner cities particularly.
This is one of the obstacles Lutheran Rural Relief is facing right now.
Yes, doesn't that have quite an impact on the amounts that are being given to foreign aid?
Yeah. Well, what do you all think of that? I've got a big opinion, but I don't want to say it right away. Yeah.
I think sometimes it's easier to get a congregation to give to foreign country than it is to give to our own local food pantries and something. I think it might be that they don't want to get involved and it's just easier to write a check and say that's it, I'm done with it. But I think it may be something else. It may be that they see the same homeless people. They don't see any change if they give to the local pantry. And so one of the things that we try to do is to go back and forth. This time we're going to do something for our local pantry. And the next time, so you're not always sort of doing the same thing.
Yeah. Other comments?
I think it's probably very difficult for the average person to assess need. And your number one item is need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the inner city person and what they're experiencing versus someone in an overseas country.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think people really don't know and have a good basis for where to send.
I think there's also been a distrust at times of big, you know, seeing Lutheran World Relief as a big whatever charity and not necessarily have had some unfortunate history of some other charities not making good use of money. So they tend to think, well, if we control the money locally, we know what's happening.
What happened to Lutheran Designated Advance? Because that was popular in my area once. And you could, people have different favorites for charities. Much of it was overseas, but you could specify where you wanted to give memorials to and that sort of thing. And I felt it was very helpful because people vary on who they want to help.
Yeah, I don't know that one.
Isn't it in existence anymore?
Might be, but it's not with us. Yeah.
It seems like when you talk about giving to local communities, we as an American society almost want people in Waterfield dependent on us as a society, and yet as World Relief, you work with them to foster their own communities and build their own communities.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an oxymoron.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're trying to do. We can't do anything for ourselves, we have to give it to everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I've been serving as the Northwest District Representative on the Missouri Senate Lutheran World Relief Programs. And we've had a meeting of the different delegates down in Mexico City looking at third world problems and relating it to the time when they had their earthquake, I believe in 1986, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we've toured around, looked at the results of work done, actually.
Mm-hmm.
One of which was going into an apartment building, completely done through donated funds.
Mm-hmm.
These individuals who saw us as the helpers really were so gracious to us. Secondly, they turned around and raised money within their own apartment and gave it, whatever it was, to Lutheran World Relief Missouri Synod.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that's a good demonstration of how the results are there for us this capitalize on, if you want to use that word, but where they're turning around and seeing the need to assist others.
You remind me of something in John Bachman's book. I pointed this out earlier in the session, one of the books I asked the bookstore to have, and he quotes a German pastor. There's a picture here, it says Ausgabe, you know, Milchpulver from Lutheran World Relief, milk powder, egg and milk powder. For these children, it says, a German pastor said at LWRA that Americans are thus breaking bread for us, and we are with them as guests because of the relief that was coming in. And this idea of sharing, this morning Michael Pell was talking about worship as sharing, and how Christian service so often has that key to it, which puts us on some kind of a new footing with each other. I would say, you know, on this issue, something we have to keep in mind is the scale. Something like 86 cents of every dollar stays in your parish, if you're a Lutheran parish. And as a nation, we are 28th, we're the bottom of the list of the industrialized world in the amount of our wealth that we give as foreign aid. And those who give the most also do the most at home, and it's the good old Danes and the Norwegians. They come close to the 1% of GNP, which is the standard accepted by the rich countries as what they should be giving as foreign aid, what they could easily afford to give as foreign aid. They come close to that 1%. We're down at 0.025 of a percent of GNP for foreign aid. Another comparison, which is powerful, I think, this is an age of welfare cuts, right? Well, the food stamp program, the Women and Children in Poverty program, and one other federal poverty program for the state of Illinois equal the total budget of the United Nations World Food Program. And I've been around the world and I've seen the thousands and millions of people who live on World Food Program grain. You'll see one tomorrow if you come and watch this film in Angola. That grain keeps the city of Luena, Angola alive, World Food Program. And yet the whole budget of World Food Program is only the same as these programs in the state of Illinois. And so when our parishes are thinking that they can't do it all, I sort of wonder a bit about that, because I mentioned the Danes. If you're a Dane, $900 of your tax bill goes to foreign aid. If you're an American, $40 goes to foreign aid. And yet who looks after their society in a social contract sort of way? The Scandinavian countries. The fact is those who help at home also help overseas. That's my opinion. Those who think we can't help overseas because we have to help at home, you know, some of us have a point there. Maybe some of us go the other way. But I think we can do both. We certainly have the capacity in our church. And another statistic here is that the church as an entity isn't a whole lot more generous than Uncle Sam as an entity in foreign aid. I think $1.5 billion is going into the ELCA plates every year. And something like, if you add up global missions and LWR, you come to $30 or $40 million. And that's way under 1%, I do believe. Or is it 1? I have to get my calculator out.
Doesn't the Lutheran Church, though, have a record of being more helpful in its foreign aid than other denominations? I'm thinking of Namibia, for instance, where the Lutheran Church was so active among the dispossessed there, and also in Zaire, where the Lutheran Church was doing such a wonderful job in helping out those who had fled and couldn't even get water, but the church mm-hmm. was active there.
Yeah, we've got a great record in certain places, and a lot to be proud of and a lot to build on. There's no doubt about it. I just think we could enjoy a lot more of this kind of success, and a little bit in the spirit of here, a lot more of a testing of those scriptures which ask us to see God in the hungry, you know, to see Him in the least of our brothers and sisters. To go out with that kind of a sense of what we can do out there. I'd like to put one more up there, which strikes me. Did you see I think there's a nice connection between the Christian aid of that film and the destroyed cities. Who bombed the cities? The U.S. Air Force.
Yeah.
Who helped put them back together? The church. The government did too. But could we say that there's really something healthy for your spirit if you clean up the mess? I just added this one on the spot. I didn't think of that before. But clean up the mess, even though the other guy started the trouble. There are a lot of modern parallels with this. And the question of landmines is a big one. The question of what we have sprinkled over the country of Laos, for example, in 9 years of secret bombing, one bomb load every 8 minutes. And the country is littered with these little bombies. They're called bombies. Now, that's the government's. Maybe the commies caused that problem. We had to respond to them. But going in and cleaning up the mess, even when you didn't cause it, or you didn't start it, maybe that's a kind of principle that puts us face to face with God out there. I'd just like to close with a thought going back to that story about Karl Mao and the two bags of flour. Today, our granaries are full. Our country's doing well. It's in the middle of a huge growth spurt. And I think the question is still asked us whether we can eat all that food ourselves or whether we need to share it with those around us who are not our neighbor, who are not like us. Because we're not called to Europe anymore. We're called to other places. And I don't think the question goes away. I think the question that we face in this kind of, the questions we face in this kind of work are right there in some of those key scripture passages. And calling us always to the kind of example set by the Good Samaritan. You know, the story that followed the question, and who is my neighbor? We have a huge place on this planet. Back in the 40s, we seem to be rising to the challenge, it seems to me. Right now, we seem to be in a bit of withdrawal. And maybe it's a call for the church to turn the country around a little bit on this one. You asked about different churches. One to keep in mind is the Mennonites. A 250,000 Mennonites in North America do more of this kind of work than 7 million Lutherans. And it's not that complicated, you know, for how they do it. They go out and work as volunteers. There's 900 of them out there at all times as short-term volunteers. They come back and they fire up their parishes with what they've seen and heard out there. And they give. But it's not an astronomical sum. It works out to about $60 a head for the Mennonites. And I feel funny reducing it to dollars in a sense, because this is such, this is life and breath of the faith. I think when you feel like you're able to be a witness, you're able to be Christ to somebody, when they maybe see a little bit of Christ in you and you see Christ in them, why reduce that to dollars? But I think in our world, the dollar does provide a way for those who cannot go to get out there. And here's a quote from the film, which holds true, I think, today. Through this kind of Christian service, each can demonstrate to the far corners of the earth his dedication to the Lord's command. Love your neighbor as yourself, the great commandment. When do we see you thirsty? When do we see you hungry? Final comment? Yeah.
So often in society today, we evaluate our giving by, do they deserve it? In our own society, probably more than in foreign countries, because we don't know. But I think that's one of the things with welfare and everything. People, maybe they aren't working, maybe they don't deserve it, and, but yet right. that we aren't asked to evaluate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dan?
Two things is, I think our people really want to give, but there are very few church leaders or pastors that ever even mentioned world hunger appeal, and found that when it is explained and offering envelopes are easily available, people want to give. And number two, we found in emphasizing world hunger this year for the first time is many people just assumed part of their benevolence was going to world hunger. All of a sudden they found out it wasn't.
Right.
And that kind of spurred people on to say to give, but I don't know if I'm blaming us pastors or church leaders, but I think people are ready. Is that too positive?
No. I think it really almost comes down to, you know, we have ears to hear. Are we here? Do we have anything to hear?
Yeah.
And what is our, what do we preach about? You know, my I've said this every time I've been in Holden, I think, but I preach from time to time as a layperson. And half the time you can take that Sunday's text and preach about this kind of stuff, because it's there every second Sunday virtually.